Good morning, everyone. This is Kilo 6 of Sierra United November, and this is South Coast, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Coast organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARA server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by Kilo Bravo 8 or Zulu Golf Lima, and all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they have checked in. Information regarding your HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control for this session is actually Gordon, KY6B from Central Florida, with Jim, KV4QY as his backup. My name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I'm merely opening it up this morning. I live in the city of Vero Beach, Florida, 10 minutes from the Atlantic coast, where it's currently a temperature of 59 degrees, expecting a high of about 76, but a very beautiful start to the day. Prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, come aboard. Hearing no emergency traffic, and as we always say, that's a great thing. How about anyone celebrating a birthday either last week or maybe this upcoming week that would like to be the first to check in? So if you're one of those stations, come aboard. No birthday stations either. Well, you know, we did have some last week, and maybe we'll have some in the future. So with that, this is the Sunday Morning Rag Chew. The purpose of this net is to bring our members and non-members together in a relaxed and informal atmosphere to enjoy a moderated rag chew. Our topic this morning is something all of us are interested in: what's next in computing? How long have you been there? And maybe you'd like to share that with us this morning. If you have any questions of the NCS, he's an expert in that field, so you may want to just throw them out to him. But I do want to let you know that I record all my sessions, and that if you've been part of this session this morning, you'll be part of that recording, in hopes that it may get posted on our website as a podcast. You know, I'm going to drop it here for just one moment. I want to make one announcement, and then I'll throw it over to Mr. Gordon. So let me pause for just one moment. We want to make sure that you've checked out our website, and once again, that's www.voip.southcoast.com. We've made some major changes. You know, it's a lot brighter now with pictures. Display has changed. We've added a scheduling calendar covering various spots around the world. So we ask that you take a look at it and give us your comments if you'd like. Also, the NCS schedule that was previously found in the left sidebar of a website has now been removed. This information is now found under Net Schedules, found at the top portion of the homepage in calendar form. So if you haven't had a chance to look at that website, do take that time. It's a fantastic site, and we'd like to thank Steve once again for that. So with that, Mr. Gordon, KY6B, I'm going to let you take the reins, and hopefully you'll have a fantastic net, and you have some fantastic information for us. So this is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, turning it over to KY6V.
Okay, thank you, Kathy, and good morning, South Cars. Gordon here, KY6V, and I'm squawking to you from Central Florida, where our temperature is about 54 degrees, supposed to get up to around 70 here today, I'm being told. No rain in the sight, so I think it's going to be a nice day overall. The subject this morning is what's next in computers. And to this end, I have done some research on the subject with my good friends at Google, and I have found reams of information on the Internet, and by the most part, the experts are singing about the same tune. There seems to be a common impression that the PC, you know, the desktop or tower computers are on their way out in popularity and being replaced with laptops, tablets, smartphones, and the like. The mouse, I might add, is in danger also by being replaced by your finger in a touch-and-drag type application. Further to this, some of the engineering firms are experimenting with touch screens where the finger is applied to the back of the handheld unit and viewed on the front screen. Sort of an interesting concept. Let me buy a nickel here for a second. Okay, reduction of size in just about all areas seems to be a popular approach. Nanotechnology seems in vogue, down to the point of making your Dick Tracy or Rolex watch a mini computer. Beam me up, Scotty. I'm ready to leave. The cloud concept in internet application appears to have an astronomical coverage. There's just reams and reams to read about out there on the internet on this. In the beginning, I looked at this as just a big hard drive in the sky that rented space for your storage. In reality, this concept is as broad as it is wide. The bottom line in cloud availability is for a price. Nothing changes in this respect, I would think. The system is targeting not only the business area, but also the single user. The concept purports lower cost to you and to them. This is done in a number of ways. Instead of you renting a server, as an example, space for your website, using your own people to keep the site maintained, their automatic system will do it for you. In some respects, the server that is offered is the availability of a high-end computer already loaded with the programs you wish to use. So instead of you paying $400 or $500 for a program, let's say from Microsoft Office or the like, you can use the system in virtual mode. And you don't have to bother about buying the program or placing it on your computer. But remember, there's a price for this. So without taking this further and realizing that infinity has no limits, let's hear from you. Tell us where you think things are going. Tell us where you started in computing, if you'd be so kind. Did you start in the DOS days, or Lord and behold, maybe with Microsoft Vista? Check-ins, please. Suffixes only, and this is KY6V for South Cars.
Quebec Yankee.
Sierra United November.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Zulu, India, Victor.
Okay, that's a good start. Let's get started here with four. I've got Mr. Jim up there in Georgia. Hi, Jim. Be right with you. I've got Miss Sunshine. Thanks for the opening this morning, Kathy. I've got VXP and Mr. Ohio, and I've got ZIV, Mr. Illinois. So, Mr. Georgia, I know you started back when the TI-99s and the Commodore 64s were in vogue, I'll bet, Jim. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, KB4QI, Echo 1880. Now then, I started in TI-99 and Commodore, or Commodore is what we called it, but anyhow. Went through that, went through CPM, went through DOS. I'm still in the DOS. And I went through Windows 95, 98, 2000, Millennium, I don't know what all, and then finally XP. And for the most part, XP is where I stopped. And then I went to 07, but that computer went belly up, so I had to forget about that. About determined it's a hard drive, but anyway, that's the story on that. I feel like there is a major movement underway right now. Let me cycle here. There's a major movement in storage. I'm told that the thumb drive, the USB thumb drive, is coming in, and CD-ROMs are going out because the CD-ROM can only hold about 750 megs. That ain't nothing. Everything now is counting gigs. You don't talk about megs. And golly, back in the TI-99 days, you talk about 1,000 bytes, you were talking about a big program. Now it's a gigabyte. So, and ain't no better program. It's just high overhead. That's all it is to it. But anyway, that's where it's going. You can now get with ease. I mean, without even going to any specialty, you can go to the neighborhood Walmart or Kmart or something like that, and buy these thumb drives for all the way up to 64 gigs that I've noticed. And they probably don't go bigger than that, but that's how big it's on the shelf right now. So that would be 64 times as big as my computer is. There you go. KV4QI.
Well, thanks for that, Jim. And some interesting points. You know, I go back to CPM also. First computer I ever looked at ended up on our engineering department at the TV station. Had a green screen, ran CPM. And that was the start of the whole mess. You know, this cloud type situation that I'm talking about, I think there'll be some discussion here this morning, I hope. It has some pros and cons in my thinking, and that not only the cost factor, and I don't know really yet what that's going to be. But I don't like taking my data and storing it in some foreign locker someplace. I want it right here where I know where it is and I can retrieve it and guard it and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm not comfortable with that storage concept yet. All right, Miss Sunshine, you're up. VXP, you'll follow Kathy. Kathy, good morning again and thanks. Over.
Well, good morning, Gordon, and good morning, South Caris. I'm not sure quite where to start with computing. It's been, I got the very first computer, and that was for my son, John, when he was very young, just so he could get used to, I think he was playing games, just so he could get used to a little bit with words. And I'm not sure if that was 1984, and I'm not sure of the operating system, but it was DOS commands, and it was an IBM. It was a white monitor, white keyboard. But I've gone through a Windows 95, a Windows 98, Windows 2000, Windows Me, XP, Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, and now Windows 8.1. So I've gone through quite a few of the Windows. And as far as my equipment, I have three towers. I have five laptops, and my newest laptop is actually a laptop versus and a tablet. The screen can flip around. You can turn it into a tablet. I'm very used to using a stylus with it, getting very accustomed to it. It's very thin, very light. There are not many USBs on that, only a couple, so I have a docking station whenever I want to use something else. But when Jim is talking about the flash drives, the memory sticks. I went away from the little ones, and I have an external drive, which is, I think, a terabyte. And then I also have another one, which is the 250, I think, gigabyte. It's a little heavier. Let me pause for just a moment. And as you well know, I teach by computers for my job, and I'm very on it all the time, as you well know, with South Cars and whatever I'm doing. I'm currently in the background working in that formal evaluation I'm going to have. So very accustomed to it. The cloud, I do agree with. I'm not too comfortable with that. It's called SkyDrive on a couple of the new machines I have. And actually, when I do the cleaning on my machine, the C cleaner, it automatically goes into this SkyDrive. So I'm looking for some interesting information on the cloud and the SkyDrive. But other than that, that's about all I have to say right now. But I'm looking forward to see what other information you can provide. So back to you, KY6V, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the future can be with computers.
Thanks, Kathy. Well, I think one thing is they're going to get so doggone small you won't be able to even find them when you put them down. Hey, tell me a little bit more about this tablet. From what I am gathering, it's actually a fully equipped laptop. But it can be transferred into a tablet configuration by swinging the screen around and plopping it down as though the screen is now exposed like a tablet would be exposed. So let me try and rephrase my question here. It is really a full-blown laptop with a swivel screen. Is that it? Over.
Yes, Gordon, that is it. It is much lighter than the laptop I'm on right now. It's much smaller. The screen, I think, is only about 11 inches. It's much smaller, has probably much smaller storage. I've just added a few things. I do have EchoLink in it, and I have Office and other programs on it, and it's very thin. And yes, it is true. It has a hinge, so it has a keyboard when you want to use it as a laptop. And you can just flip it around. It turns into a tablet, which is what I wanted. And you can use the stylus to work on that. But it also has an icon at the bottom where it brings up a keyboard. So use that stylus on a keyboard right on the front. So I'm still working with it, but I've enjoyed it so far. And it is much, much thinner. But you like you said, we have the smartphones, you know. Anyone who has a smartphone can access just about anything. And you're going to find out that the towers are a thing of the past. Laptops may be a thing of the past. They may just go to these tablets. And, you know, there are the tablets. You can buy the external docking stations and external keyboards that can attach to them, too. So I hope that answered your question. And I'm just having a lot of fun with the technology I have, and I have tons of it. So back to you, Gordon, from Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Seems to me I've heard you mention this, Kathy. What's the name of this laptop? I know that you buy most of your laptops from Dell. Wasn't it an Ultra something or other? Over.
It's an XPS. I think they have a series of 10, 11, 12, 15. It keeps going, but it's called an Ultrabook. Because it's called an Ultrabook, it serves the two purposes. It's a laptop as well as a tablet, but it's called an Ultrabook. And I think HP has now come out with them. I'm sure most of the other suppliers will start coming out with that because people are going to, you know, portable things. They want that tablet. And wasn't too interested in the tablet for the reason it did not, you couldn't connect much to it, and they were smaller. So I wanted something that had an 11-inch screen, and the tablet that I had priced was going to be probably just as expensive as this. So I went this way so that I could have the laptop as well. So So I hope that answers your question. But, you know, it's only going to get, you're only going to come out with more and more this type of thing for portability. So back to you, Gordon.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Kathy. KY6V here for South Cars. And we're discussing this morning what the newer trends are going to be possibly looking at in the computer field as time marches on. I'm fearful that, you know, they want to get smaller and smaller, which means to me they're going to be harder and harder to work on. Mr. Ohio, what have you got to say? Good morning, Rick. KY6V, over.
This is N1DXP. Only thing I got to say is, where is the warm? It's been very cold, snowy. Currently 12 degrees, wind chill of 2. It's supposed to get up to 38 today, but the way it looks right now, we've just had about 2 inches of snow and not very sunny out there. As far as computing, I can go back to probably, I would say, late 70s, early 80s. I was able to get involved in some of the old, I think about the Commodore 64, Atari 128. Had a friend of mine had both of them, and kind of learned the old programming. Writing, not so much writing, but having to enter the data, especially in the Atari 128, you had to do that program perfect. If you didn't, it just wouldn't work. Then I had a chance to pick up a, I don't know if anybody remembers the GRID series computers that or laptops. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were actually put out by Radio Shack. It wasn't really a color computer as such like today, but it was a, I think they call it a tricolor. Had a 3D visual screen, which was quite the thing for a little laptop. Great little computer. The only drawback, let me draw for a second. The only drawback was that there was an internal battery that for some reason was in back of the CPU, if that went bad, it was a devil of a job to get that replaced. I mean, it was the idea they had to remove the CPU chip, which meant some soldering and unsoldering, and it was just such a headache that if that battery went bad, it was quite a job to replace it. And I liked it because the laptop was simple, yet had features that you couldn't find on any of the new ones today. I remember one part of the programming was that you were actually able to create your own forms with the borders, and you know, it was just something that you didn't need a special program. It was built right in. Originally, I got it through a friend of mine who was working for a defense contractor, and they had an auction of laptops. And I think back and I say, wow, if they would have improved that laptop a little bit, they didn't really have to do much, but maybe add more memory to it. But it was a great little system. I've been in through for other laptops. I've had I had a Compaq, which eventually got sold out by or bought out by HP. Let me drop for a second. Yeah, the Compaq Presario notebook. It was funny, that one I had a problem. It was under warranty. HP had just bought out Compaq, and it took about 5 months for them to realize, hey, they're not going to replace it, or not going to repair it, they're going to replace it. So I went from a Compaq to an HP that was like going from a $500 laptop to a $1,000 laptop. And I thought, oh great, this is even better. But as computers, as you know, they could be put out today, but 6 months later, obsolete, there's something wrong. And you know, I've had so many different laptops, and I think to myself, computing age, like Gordon, you say, it's getting smaller. I just saw something on the TV the other day was that, I'm not sure which auto manufacturer is doing it, but they're talking about putting a watch that will replace your key fob for unlocking and locking your car, as well as starting. I'm thinking, wow, if they can put that into a watch that you'd wear, you wouldn't need to worry about the key getting in and out of the car. As far as starting, you just hit a button on the watch and that actually starts the car, or actually hit a button on the car dash that would start the car. I think Lexus already has that. But they're getting smaller and more compact on the watches. That's going to be, I'd like to see what they eventually end up with in that line. N13XP back to net control.
Well, thanks, Rick. You know, you're sort of the watch guy anyway. You've got quite a few watches of different brands and quality and so on and so forth. Well, you just got to watch the guy, you know, on the other end of the parking lot when you start your car, because he's got a little gadget. He's reading the code. When you go into the store, why, he goes into your car. A lot of that's going on right now. On the warm weather, I don't know what to tell you. It's really odd. It's strange. You know, we're building up into some decent temperatures here over the next few days. By the middle of the week, we're going to be plummeting right back down where we started. It's a roller coaster ride. It's just up and down, up and down, up and down, for some strange reason. On the Atari, I remember that rascal. I didn't have one, but you brought back some memories. Yeah, I know on the TI-99, which was really the first one that I got, was really ahead of its time. It was 32-bit, sold for $3,500 or something like that when it first started, and then its last days in civilization, it was selling for $29.95 or something like that. Let me, thanks, Rick. Stick around and jump back in when you're ready. Let's move up to Illinois and find out how Dwayne is doing this morning and what you have to offer, Dwayne. Good morning, sir. Over.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I could be I don't know. I'm illiterate. I don't know anything about the computer, to be honest with you. Where I started at was someone gave me one. I didn't even really want one, but someone forced me into it. They just gave me one. but I don't know where I was. Let me think. where did I start out at? I can't recall. To be honest with you, what it was. DOS, I think it was. Computer, and then that's what it was. And then I got on this interweb. I didn't know about Echolink, or I would have gotten on it probably sooner. It's very interesting to listen to the fine communications that we have here. And, you're very knowledgeable by listening to all the communication that goes on. Where it's going, I don't know. I don't want to think. Where it's going. you know, should I be? I'm surprised to be here on a Sunday. But my bride is, the gentleman I go to church with is on a cruise. I don't know where he's going, but he's out cruising somewhere in the ocean. here I am. I just thought I'd check in and give you some numbers. I do have a question, though. One that's appropriate. N9ZIV.
Okay. Thank you, Duane. Did you say you have a question, or you'll jump in with one that's appropriate? I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah. I said I do have a question, one that's appropriate. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get some more check-ins here, and I'll put you down as a recheck as we get just a little further down the line. You know, mentioning DOS, I find myself quite frequently still using it. You know, the operating systems is an example from Microsoft, and I don't care if it's XP or Vista or 7 or 8.1. I'll give you the ability to go back into DOS Direct. And I use that for a lot of applications, particularly on determining my IP configuration state and so on and so forth. So, you know, DOS isn't really lost. Okay, any other check-ins at this point? We're talking about what's next in computers. KY6V, over.
Victor Hotel.
Delta 10 George. Yankee Zulu Romeo.
Okay, very good, guys. Good morning to you, Steve. Good morning to you up there, Paul. And good morning to you, Bernie. Anybody else before we take the three? Okay, let's start with Mr. Louisiana. I don't know if you want to handle it now or later, but I'd like to hear your comments on the Raspberry Pi. And, of course, also your feeling on clouds and whatever you want to put in. Steve, good morning. Over.
Well, good morning, Gordon, and good morning to everybody on board this morning. KF5VH, Steve from Lafayette, Louisiana. Well, I thought I would... Well, you're not the only one, Gordon, that goes back to DOS. I go back to DOS all the time in these operating systems. And I don't know, sometimes if they ever got rid of that, I think I'd be in trouble. But my computer experiences with generally available operating systems goes back to something called PT11. PT11 was for digital equipment computers, and PT stands for paper tape. It was an operating system based on paper tape because the computer did not have a hard disk. There was no hard drive. So the storage medium was paper tape. And we actually used PT11 to build an operating system that ran in the computer and supported five people running BASIC all at the same time. It was called multi-user BASIC under PT11. My first operating system with a disk drive was called RSTS, RSTS-11, which was resource sharing, time sharing. And that meant that all the resources on the computer could be shared, and the users were time sharing the computer. A big deal back in those days. Because of my job, I was able to have one of the first IBM PCs, or actually the first IBM PC. And this is probably not the one you were thinking about with the floppy and the little hard disk. This is the one before that that came out, and all it had was two floppy drives. I had one of those at the house for a while. And I guess from there it comes up in 1975. I booted my first copy of Unix and was a system administrator for that. And then today, let me put a nickel in the machine here. Today I'm running a three-headed monster, Windows 7. I have a terabyte disk drive in the machine, and I have a pair of 3-terabyte disk drives that I use for backup. Raspberry Pi, if you haven't seen that yet, and you're interested in doing a very, very inexpensive project, Raspberry Pi was designed for teaching. It's cheap enough that they're designed to put into the classroom. And I mean really inexpensive, like $35. Yet you can run full-fledged operating systems on them. So for teaching, or if you have a special project where you want to dedicate a computer to a small task, check out a Raspberry Pi. Very interesting. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VH.
Great. Hope you'll be able to stick around and contribute more as time rolls along here, Steve. I guess the only question I've got on a Raspberry Pi, is it bulletproof? I mean, these kids in school today go through a computer faster than a World War scenario over.
Well, natively, they don't have a disk drive. The way you boot a Raspberry Pi is you go to another computer and you write a small an SD card. And you put your bootable image, you put a image of your disk drive on that card, you slide it into the machine and you turn the power on. So yeah, it's bulletproof because whenever things go wrong, you just make a new image of your disk and slide it into the machine. KF5VH.
Okay. I like the cost factor. That sounds great. Thanks, Steve. And this is Gordon, KY6V, here for South Cars. We're talking about next generation in computing and what's coming up next. Mr. Paul, up there in the cold north, how are you this morning? DKG, please.
Good morning, Gordon. Good morning, Kathy. I heard you in there earlier and everybody else on South Cars. Yeah, you're right. We've got about 23, 24 degrees right now. It's supposed to drop down this afternoon into the teens. And then this evening, back into the single digits. So we had a little snow squall last night, or yesterday afternoon. I mean, it dropped about, I'd say 2.5-3 inches of snow all over. So we had to clean the cars this morning. If we didn't do it last night before we went to bed, which I didn't. So it's a real miserable winter up here in Pennsylvania. And I'm glad to hear you guys are going up a little bit down there, even though you're going to drop back down. But we drop down to your low, it will be a very welcomed high here. well, what are you going to do? As far as computing goes, I started out with a Commodore 64. Let me just break here for a second. Okay, I started out with a Commodore 64 and then progressed up into various other desktop models and then laptops, and now I got the iPad and the iPhone, and just picked up an iPhone, so I'm trying to sync that with my iPad currently, and I'm really impressed by a lot of the programs that are offered on the Apple system for the iPads and the iPhones. There's one particular program that I got recently, it was only like $5-6, something like that, but you could actually draw and create photos or pictures, and it's very, very detailed. You can get into very small, detailed work with it, and I enjoy using that in my limited spare time, but it is it's very rewarding when you can create a nice picture like a snow scene up here, or, any type of photo you want. You can even do portraits with it, but I'm not quite there yet. I got to more practice with to get to control of it before I could actually draw a face. But I'm really enjoying it, and really enjoy all the modern technology, such as Earth cams and things that they have on there, where you can watch live video feeds from around the world, various places of interest. So it's, I think it's progressing, and I'm enjoying it very much. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Gordon. This is 3DKG in snowy Delaware County, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Paul. KY6V here with Paul up there in the cold and snowy Pennsylvania. Well, I hope you have the day off and you can stay inside where it's warm and play with your toys. That would turn out just fine, I would think. Hope the knee's doing okay too, Paul. Let's rotate the apparatus here and point it at Wisconsin, which I suspect Bernie, you've got your share of snow also. How are you this morning, and thanks for coming aboard. Over.
Okay, Gordon, KY6V, KC9YZR. Good morning to you and everyone else. Yeah, it's snowing right now, just like it's been doing every day or every other day throughout the winter. And as far as computers go, I don't know. So much to talk about. It's been hours, probably, every little thing here. But the first computer I had a chance to use was actually, I think it was a TRS-80, a RadioShack Model 2, and it had a 12-inch monochrome display, and to the right of the display it had what they called an 8-inch floppy drive, but if you measure the jacket, it measured about 10 inches or 10 and a quarter inches or something, so that 8-inch, that must have meant size of the round disk inside of the floppy or something like that, because the outside measured about 10 inches or something like that. Very large floppy disk, and I actually still have one of those floppies. I don't get rid of it or something. It's a mailing list. I can't use it since I don't have a Model 2 anymore. But I remember back when I had an Atari 2600 game console, brand new, right when it first came out. They were talking about making a cartridge or something to turn that Atari 2600 into a PC, but I guess that never panned out, or they never did it or something. So anyway, the first computer I actually owned was a color computer 2, or Coco 2, they're calling them, from Radio Shack, and that had a 40 column display and a floppy drive. Matter of fact, the it didn't have I don't think it even had a floppy drive, to tell you the truth. I'm trying to remember. And I remember saving programs and running programs from a video cassette tape, and they called it a data set drive. Data set drive, they called them. It didn't even have a floppy, I don't think. And later on, I got a color computer 3 when I went to 80 column display. Still black and white, of course. And so anyway, that data set drive, that was something else where you had to wait for it to load, and then of course wait for it to save for a while there. And I don't know if that one ran at 7 megahertz or the following one ran at 7, and then I had one that ran at 12 megahertz. One had a 300 baud telephone modem. I'm switching hands here with my HT to the other hand because I was using a mouse there. But it had a 300 baud telephone modem, and then it had slot there for game cartridges or to plug in your telephone modem or whatever. So I ended up getting what they call a 4-to-1, I don't even remember what they called it, interface of some type, where it converted the one slot into four slots, so you could have your game cartridge slot open, and you could have another slot for your 300 baud modem and your whatever. So anyway, later on I went to 1200 baud and then the 2400 baud, and finally went to the 56K modem there before they came out with the broadband, of course. But I had a color computer 2 and a color computer 3, and I actually bought a Tandy 1000. It was on sale half price. It was a $700 computer. It was on sale for $300. But then I found out one possible reason why it went on sale. The hard drives were no longer available for them. You had to buy them separately. So I had a sort of a big doorstop there. I couldn't get a hold of a hard drive for it. So I didn't use that one much, that Tandy 1000. All I ended up using was the desktop, whatever you call it, their features or whatever. So I'm actually using a netbook right now for my Echolink. It's called an Acer Aspire 1. And it's a netbook, slightly smaller than a laptop. Acer Aspire 1. Got from Walmart in 2008. And it has 11.6-inch display, diagonally measured. And that's what I use on my Echolink now. I used to use it for accessing the internet from the library or someplace when I didn't have internet at home. And some of the sites I used were not Internet Explorer friendly, and that's what they used at the library. And they wouldn't let me install Firefox or Chrome or any other browser. So I got the netbook for that purpose, so I could go wires on it, but I do have the sounds shut off, so I won't be sending, hopefully won't be sending database updated and scan complete and that type of stuff through the echoing system, but it is using the Avast antivirus, and it automatically updates and automatically scans once a day, quick scan, and then does a complete scan once a week. On Sundays, I guess I do it. But anyway, it has that touchpad on it. Slide your finger across to move the cursor around the screen, and I shut the tap off because I would accidentally tap it when I'm just putting my finger on it, and instead of being able to slide the cursor around the screen, it would execute wherever the cursor was. So I didn't care for that. It was very, very sensitive to the touch there. So I shut the tap part of it off so I wouldn't be accidentally doing some sort of command or going somewhere. So I didn't want to go to just wanting to slide the or move the cursor around the screen there. So I just use the buttons on the touchpad, I guess they call it. But it would be very interesting to see where it goes from here. And I could go on and on and on about my experiences with it and stuff like that. But I will say this. I actually wanted to learn how to do DOS, so I bought a PC 6.0 DOS, a complete set of disks and books and everything, and then they switched to Windows. I just learned DOS, and then they switched over to Windows. I said, yeah, sure, fine. They switched to Windows right after I learned DOS, and you know how to you do the go-to lines and stuff like that, and if this, go there, and putting in each line in there. I learned how to program in DOS, and then they switched to Windows on me. So, anyway, it was very interesting and different, and I don't know. I have so many different thoughts going through my mind. I'm trying to sort them out and come out with just the most important ones, and I can't seem to come out with the ones I really wanted to say. I should have wrote them down, but anyhow, just trying to keep up with everything, and you can't really seem to keep up with it. So I just go with what I am comfortable with, and hopefully it's okay. So back to you, KY6V, KC9YZR.
Very good. Well, thank you, Bernie. KY6V for South Cars. We lost a little bit of your transmission towards the tail end, and I'm not sure what was happening. It was like you had buffer problems or something. It was hiccuping and sort of going on and off, but nothing intelligible, and then all of a sudden you cleaned up and you were fine. So, not sure what that's reading here at the moment. TRS-80s, I remember them very well. I never owned one, but I had an awful lot of friends that used them. And as far as Avest is concerned, I support it. I've been using that on all of my computers for quite a number of years. I'm using the free version and have been very, very happy with it. Familiar with the Acer laptop, not the notebooks per se. We've been running an Acer laptop as the control computer on one of our local repeaters here for quite a bit, and it's not only a control function for the repeater, but it's also Echolink interface to the RF world here locally. So very good. Thanks, Bernie. I see in the text box here that at one point I was doubling with you, Jim. Did you try to get in, and did I miss you, sir? QI, please.
No, my wife bumped her mother, but I didn't call nothing. By the way, the TI-99, that comes from a computer that was used especially in Nassau. It was the only computer in existence, and I don't know what maybe still is, that would work math problems to 16 digits beyond the decimal point. and they had to have that kind of accuracy to hit the moon and stuff like that. But that's why the TI-99 was invented, was for NASA. Over.
Well, you're juggling my mind, Jim, because I think I have heard that. It was quite a machine for its time, I'll tell you that. And as I say, when they first came out, they were something like $3,500. And I had all of the accessories that went with it, and there were all kinds that were offering. You know, the tape drives and so on and so forth. Everything was stored on tape back in those days. But I did a lot with that machine. I learned BASIC on it for programming. I got fairly good at being able to read a line of ASCII code and understand what it was saying. And it was a pretty good building block for me. Okay, guys and gals, well, we're 54 minutes into the current hour. We're looking for additional check-ins. Anything you'd like to add on where we're headed and how the devil we're going to get there? KY6V, suffixes only, please.
Juliet Alpha Kilo.
Hey, good morning, Mr. Jack. Come right aboard. Take a quick peeky at your audio. It sounds like your headset's down the hall. Over.
All right, let's move a little closer there. I don't know what's up with it. We'll check it out again. How's that any better?
No, it's about the same. You're running very low. I can understand you, Jack, but you don't have the gusto and the punch. Over.
All right, well, let me just connect, and I will be back in a couple minutes. K4JAK.
All righty. I also had a note here, Dwayne, if you're still with us. Up there in Illinois, you had a question, sir. Over. ZIV.
Well, I did. But not pertaining to this particular topic. So I'll just go ahead and, if I may. A podcast, is that when you say podcast, I was listening to Kathy earlier when she introduced the net and whatever, and said, and you always say that, you know, that you're going to be recording on podcasts, which I enjoy. That's very, I really enjoy this. This is great. I need to come in more often. Stay here, I think. But anyway, make it be quicker on this. Is the podcast on the computer, on your website? I mean, is that something on your website?
Yes, it is, and, you know, basically speaking, it's nothing more than an audio recording, Dwayne. I've got several computers currently recording this morning's session. I know that Kathy is recording also, so we've got some backups should we run into any problem. What I do is I take that audio recording and I put it through an audio editing program, okay, and transfer it from a WAV file format to an MP3 format. Put some intro music into the start and to the ending of the recording, and then place that recording as a audio MP3 file on our website. Our main website is located in Orlando, Central Florida. That's the voip.southcars.com. I don't know what, I haven't counted them recently, but we probably have over 100 now, or very close to it, podcasts, recordings that go back to when South Cars VOIP first started. And we take the major programs that we feel really had some substance to them, and post them and put them in an archive fashion for people to listen to at their discretion. Does that make sense? Over.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. Sounds very interesting. Thank you, sir. You answered my question. I just wanted to, you know, suppose I'd know if I'd go to the website, but like I said, I don't do much with Echolink, to tell you the truth. I think it's, on email, barely, every month or two, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't say that. Most people check their email every day or three or four times a day or more. thank you, sir. N9ZLV.
Okay, very good, Dwayne. I see Jack is back, and I also see that GYF is trying to get in here and couldn't. I hope it wasn't my fast keying. Let me, Jack, I'll be with you here in just a short. GYF Fort Myers, come aboard, sir.
Hi, Gordon and Annette. Doug here, Fort Myers. Maybe it's a combination of you and my KY6V2N2222 transistor Echolink interface. Maybe it's just not fast enough, you know? It used to have fast problems, and maybe it still does. It's just not fast enough. I hardly ever get into a KY6V net. Bernie, it sounded like Bernie, KC9YZR, might have had the Vox delay threshold setting opportunity. That sounded to me like his skip a beat was a Vox delay possible opportunity. I don't know. I wanted to remind you guys that Windows life cycle, in terms of their operating systems, XP, regular support for XP ends April 8th of this year, which means it's going to get antique real quick. So there you go. And Windows 7, I sure like it. I sure like it. Anything I've heard about 8 or 8.1, I don't like. And what I'm hearing about Windows 9, possibly called Threshold, experimental Windows 9, is going to developers in the late spring. And it sounds to me like they're going to try to make more out of 9 than 8 was. It's going to be touchpad, game compatible, Xbox compatible. They're going to make it, try to make everything out of it. Now, I got a question, Gordon, for you and Steve, and it's this. KA0GYF here. What was the Raspberry chat? It was part of the cloud discussion. It was part of cloud drive. External operating drive or cloud storage, and then I also heard recovery. What the heck was this Raspberry, and what's the spelling on that? KA0GYF, I'll look it up.
Well, as I picked up from Steve, I'll let him amplify on this at a moment here. It's a small, inexpensive computer. The rejuvenation of the computer is done by a card that's programmed and shoved up its nostrils, you know, to get the machine started. Available cost can be as low as about $35. And one of Steve's comments was that this is very affordable for teaching and school use. Which is what was being recommended. Any comments on the Raspberry? And also, when you come back, I'd be interested in knowing, Doug, what your plans are with XP. I know that you've still got a couple of machines with XP on it. So do I. I'm slowly getting these machines up to Windows 7 state. I haven't ventured into 8.1 yet. Kathy seems to be very satisfied with 8.1. I think Rick's running it up there, too. 8 or 8.1. So, Steve, Victor Hotel, any comments for Doug? Over.
Thanks, Gordon. I'll make my first comment about Windows 8. If you look at the history of Windows, every other operating system is a dog. If you think about it, every other operating system is a dog. So since Windows 7 was loved, Windows 8 had to be a dog, and Windows 9 will be loved again. That's just my philosophy on it. Dealing with the Raspberry Pi, and it's Raspberry like the fruit, and Pi, P-I, and the current model, as far as I know, is Model B. It's a small circuit board, and it has an Ethernet connection. It has a pair of USB connections. It has an audio out. So that means right there you can do a mouse, a keyboard, a mic. You can do that all through USB speakers. It has two video outs. It has HDMI out, and it has RCA video out. So you can pick there. It has a place to put in power, and it has a place to put in an SD card. And you prepare your SD card with an operating system. Lots of people run a version of Unix, or Linux if you prefer, on Raspberry Pi. But there are folks that have, there's nothing, I would think, that would stop you from running an Echolink controller or any type of small project you'd like to run. There's a half a gig of RAM, and the different models have different size CPUs. So it's physical hardware. It's not associated with cloud computing, and really an interesting piece of hardware. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VH.
Thanks for that, Steve. Let's throw it right back to Doug and see how he wants to parlay it. Doug, go ahead, sir.
Okay, I Googled Raspberry Pi, P-I as opposed to P-I-E, maybe to that the correct spelling. Let's see, Windows XP computers, I have two left, and they're not good for much, Gordon, on account of, you know, they're single core, so they're not worth upgrading to Windows 7 or above. I just probably won't bother. I'll just probably hobby them along, hobby and cobble, until it's no more fun hobbying, and then salvage for parts, I guess, or put them on eBay. Somebody always wants the old computers on eBay. And, all right, I'll try to figure out Raspberry Pi, and keep on chugging along here in Fort Myers. Thanks all. KA0GYF, over. Thanks, Gordon.
Okay. Well, with the weather change, maybe you just have to warm up that 2N2222, and I'm just kidding. Let's see if Jack is back in normal fashion here. K4JAK, please, or... Well, maybe he went down the hall. Or into the kitchen. One more call for K4JAK, the Master at Arms out of Fort Pierce, please. Well, we see that he's connected, but he's not responding. Okay. We are currently now about 7 minutes into the second hour. Do you feel comfortable at the moment to give a little explanation on how you're seeing this cloud structure, Steve, and some of the do's and don'ts or pros and cons or whatever, sir, over?
Sure, Gordon. We can comment back and forth. I can start with your comment about file security. If you do cloud computing of one of many types, and even if you solve the security issue, you have to be willing to say that if the network disappears, your file will be very secure, but you can't get to it anyway. So I consider that another issue that you have to be comfortable with in cloud computing. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VH.
Yeah, okay. We see you, Jack, so we'll be with you shortly. Yeah, I'm just not comfortable with this. It seems like these dudes at NSA could get into the cloud a lot faster than they can get into my computer. But that remains to be seen. Have you seen any prices for the different platforms? I think there's three major platforms that they're offering currently. And I'm also saying that if this is correct, that most of this operation is virtual. However, there are some programmers and designers out there that are coming up with some different frills to the visual or virtual aspect. Is that correct, Steve? Over.
Gordon, I don't have first-hand knowledge, my work dealing with a university means that we tend to do things ourselves. And when you do it within an enterprise, sometimes that's called thin client computing. The history on that is when you have a university, say with 5,000, 7,000, 8,000 desktop computers, that's 5,000 to 8,000 machines you have to take care of. And someone came up with the idea, well, let's put all of our computing power in the computing center, and we'll take these desktop computers, and for right now we'll run a program on them that all it does is use the keyboard, the mouse, the displays, and maybe a USB port. And what we'll do is we will run a simple program on the computers that we really don't have to keep up to date, because all it does is communicate, and we'll put all the computing horsepower and all the programs that we need to take care of and all the disk storage up at the computing center. So it's cloud computing, but it's all done within one enterprise. The network is shorter, so it's more reliable, and it's all within your own organization, so supposedly you don't worry quite as much about security. As far as pricing, though, I've never looked at that, because we don't really intend at the university to do that, at least not in the near future. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VH.
Well, you've got my interest probed here. You know, one of my frustrations, Steve, is that I've got too many computers. Certainly not in the area of 5 or 7 or 8,000 like you're talking at the university, but I've got enough that it is a pain in the hoo-hoo to keep these cleaned and running at full potential. Maybe what I ought to, some of these are remote, you know, some of these are right in front of me as I speak here this morning. Maybe I should pick my biggest and strongest computer, which at this point is a quad core and all kinds of storage capability, and use that as my main and feed all the rest of these off the main. Is really the same thing that you're talking about, is it not? Over.
That's the right concept. And you know, the second part of that is they started off using the desktop computers as thin clients to get at the data. Companies then started building thin clients so that after the PC died, you'd replace it with a very small box, and it only runs one program, and that's communicate to the servers. I raise one word of warning, and that is, if you only have one server and that server goes down, you have no computing. So if you decide to take this path, you need to be in a configuration where you have at least two servers and share disk systems between them. KF5VH.
Well, that could be arranged without too much of a hassle. I guess I'm getting lazier the older I get, Steve, and I it's such a waste of time for me with everything else that's going on to run a regular utility cleanup on each one of these machines. And then, you know, there's updates coming on all these various programs every time you turn around, and they have to be put in, and so on and so forth. Well, thank you for that, sir. Let's pick up Jack here before he needs to run off. K4JAK, what's happening down there, sir? Over.
All right, let's see if this thing is working now. Hello. I think the bar's moving anyway. Good morning, Six Victor. How's it sounding?
You sound like Fort Pierce. Doing fine, sir. Would you have to just reboot or what?
Yeah, I guess when I plugged the microphone into the USB cord, I guess it just didn't, to the port, it didn't register. I had to disconnect, of course, and drop the screen and bring it back up and plug it back in a couple times this time. So, and I finally heard the beep beep. So, we'll see. It's working now. Anyway, I did want to get in here and say good morning to you and the South Cars family out there. interesting conversation. Sorry I missed the start of it, but I did get the stitches out today, so I got back a little bit ago. So we're happy. Got a black kitty on the computer table here, letting me rub his tummy. So I'm fixing to get nailed with all four palsies here in about 3 minutes. I just I thought I'd get in there and say good morning. And Mr. Mudge says good morning also. KY6V K4JAK.
Yeah, well, don't let the cat claw your wounded finger. Glad the stitches are out. Are you moving it with ease, or it's still a little stiff?
Still a little stiff. They took it out. It'll probably be a couple, 3 months, he said, before it actually gets back to normal. It feels like there's a callus on the tip, which he said is normal. There's not one, but it feels that way, you know, like you're feeling through a hard callus. And he said just from the injury, it'll be 2 to 3 months before it actually gets back to normal. So I said, that's fine. It's still tender, but like I said, I can bend it. Not a problem there, and it'll improve with age, I guess, shall we say. I like that.
What finger is it, Jack? It's not your trigger finger, is it?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir, it is. The main trigger finger. But, hey, I am ambidextrous. I am an electrician, so I can work equally well with both trigger fingers.
Yeah, I'll bet at the same time, too. All right, Tiger. You give a great big hug for South Cars to your lady down there, and we'll be catching up with you. Well, we're going to sort of winding down here now, guys and gals. It's 17 minutes into the second hour. I've certainly enjoyed it. Anybody else have anything for the good of the order, or anybody that's just checked in? I see Daryl up there in the cold north. Daryl, we've had an interesting conversation this morning on, and this is right down your alley, as to where people are seeing computers going. What's next in computers? Daryl, would you like to come in, say good morning, and any comments? KY6V to UKZ.
Good morning, Gordon. Next in the way of computers and technology. Man, oh man, do I ever wish I had gotten in here earlier this morning. Have you talked much about the new types of displays that are out there? That's what's really got my eye lately, is the new type of displays. Holographic imaging, for one, is something new on the horizon. Not really available for public consumption yet, but it's something that the military is doing some testing in regard to, are these small orbs that just sit in the middle of your desk, and when accessed or when their services are required, they will project an image into the air, simulating as if it were a monitor, and then fully touch integrated as well. So it basically the display would appear, you know, and completely transparent up out of this orb in the middle of the desk. They have, I want to say Apple had it, but I don't think so. There's already a keyboard out of similar design, in which you put a little orb in the middle of your desk, and the image appears on your desk of the keyboard in red. And then, depending on where you touch and interrupt those beams, it basically takes your signal back into your computer, and says, well, the letter A was pressed because it was the signal was interrupted here. Same type of thing with these new displays. When you touch a particular aspect of what you're seeing in front of you, the signal will get relayed back to the device and say, well, the icon to open Echolink was just double tapped, so we'll launch the Echolink software, and just stuff like that. And then, of course, you have Google's new offering that's been on the go now for the last year, being Google Glass. I don't know if Google Glass was touched on at all. Back to you, Gordon.
No. We had talked about the waning and popularity to get away from the larger computers like the desktops, the towers, what have you. Miniaturization, and the mouse was also mentioned as possibly disappearing from the scene one of these days because of the touch tone or touch capabilities. I'm not familiar with Google Glass at all, so you might want to touch on that, Daryl. Over.
Yeah, QSO. Well, what Google Glass is, and of course it can be Googled as well to see what it is, but essentially it's a pair of glasses that you wear on your head, or a glasses frame. And in the corner of your viewing area, it'll give you, it'll give you a tiny display, a very, very high resolution display, but it's so close to your eye that it's usable. But there's already tons and tons of applications available for this, like GPS in the corner of your eye while you're driving, for instance, without having to look at an alternate screen, that'll just be there. There's several applications, smartphone integrations, things like that. So basically, you know, you'd have your display in the corner of your eye at all times when you want it. You know, if it's paired by Bluetooth, let's say, with your smartphone, anything you needed to access through your smartphone, you can still access by touch, but you can see the output of it in the corner of your eye. So that's a rather cool device that's out. Yeah, the first thing I touched on in relation to these new touch screen holographic displays. Look, of course, it comes up out of this orb in the center of your desk. So I guess miniaturization would classify in that regard as well, because you know these things are just a couple of inches, across the center, across the diameter, and it's a round device that almost looks like your classic webcam style thing. But the optical sensor in the top center of it, projects your display into the air, with light beams and whatever else, however they do it. The technology is beyond me, but I've seen one of these in operation, and it's a very, very interesting display, because not only now are we getting our desktop computers away from the desk and freeing up some space. Of course, you wouldn't even need a full size monitor on your desk anymore, your full size screen, because when you need it, it would just appear from this little orb, and I can't remember for the life of me what it's called, but I know that it is out there and it is being tested. So then, of course, you wouldn't need your 20-inch or 24-inch screen in front of you anymore, and this has full touch integration as well, so it's very, very interesting stuff. And like you say, Google Glass can be searched on google.com if anybody's interested in more information on it. That is publicly available now. It has been for about a year or so. And it integrates, like I said, with a number of smartphones, tablets, computers, all of that type of thing is, an in-eye type display. And the interesting thing is about it, it's, despite the fact that it's a tiny representation of your monitor in the corner of, like, a pair of eyeglasses, because of its extraordinary high resolution, it basically simulates a 27-inch TV at 5 to 10 feet. So if you could, what you can pick out on a 27-inch TV from 5 to 10 feet away, you could actually see in this little tiny miniaturized version of your screen in the corner of your eye. So it's definitely a progression of technology into the future. There, back to you.
Yeah, I have seen some write-ups on that. I just didn't associate Google Glass to eyeglasses. But I'm with you. What's the fanfare and hoopla regarding safety? Driving with one of these things and getting distracted and blah, 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 over?
Well, I mean, when you look at it from that perspective, it would probably be less intrusive than actually having to turn your head to, so many degrees to the left or right to view a screen that's an in-dash, let's say, GPS, or an in-dash backup camera, or something to that effect, except you wouldn't no longer have to turn your head. And the image that you see in the corner of Google Glass is transparent. So it's not obstructing your vision, but when you want to focus on it, it's there for you. So it's I would figure less intrusive, in my opinion, than some of these external screens that people either put a suction cup to their windshield in the way of self-installed GPSs, or let's say having to turn your head to see what song is playing on your car stereo, for instance, or something to that effect. You could have it up in the corner of your eye instead, like a picture-in-picture type outfit.
Yeah, now does this require a cable to your eyeglasses? Is it done by RF, so there's no umbilical cord involved, or how do they do that?
Now that one I'm not 100% sure on. The few demonstrations I've seen, it was being done wirelessly, so I would assume probably Bluetooth. Close contact devices, Bluetooth is good for around 100 feet or so, I think, so That would Bluetooth 2.0 or 3.0 probably would be the would more than likely be the interface. I don't have it up on the screen in front of me there at the moment because I'm looking at this Echolink software here. It's one of the things I love about D-Star. You know, you don't have this intrusive display. You know, you don't have to be looking at the Echolink screen on the screen in front of you, taking up your real estate when you're using the radio. With D-Star, of course, I could have my microphone in my hand and have whatever else on the screen there in front of me, or you know, use two computer screens, I guess. But that just takes up more real estate. But yeah, I think it was being done by Bluetooth, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I would really guess that that's probably the direction that they went. You know, remain in the wireless world. Well, thank you very much, Daryl. Anybody else have any comments on what we were just discussing or anything else you'd like to bring up? We are now 26 minutes into the second hour. KY6V looking for check-ins.
Victor Hotel.
Yes, sir, Mr. Louisiana. Go right ahead.
Google Glass is an amazing technology, but as usual, the law doesn't always stay up with the technology. A Google Glass user was cited, I don't think arrested, for wearing them while driving, even though supposedly they were turned off. The law enforcement officer cited the person based on the state restriction that the people in the front seat could not see any type of entertainment display. And Google Glasses are capable of bringing entertainment to the viewer. I just read a story in the past week about someone who wore Google Glass, to a movie theater. And whichever federal division is responsible for copyright, their agents showed up and arrested a person for being in a movie theater with Google Glass. So the law has a ways to catch up. And switching gears, going over to this orb you can have on your desk, in addition to projecting a display, there are some that are capable of projecting a keyboard. And it projects the keyboard on your desktop, and you can type on it, and it figures out where your fingers are going and does the typing. Back to you, Gordon, KF5VH.
Interesting, particularly the law aspect. Daryl, I hope you're still there. Answer this for me. How big a display will this orb produce? Over.
22 to 24 inches without any trouble from what I've heard. Yeah, like you said, I mentioned that keyboard in my last over when I got into talking about the display type that was, you know, capable of a similar type outfit. But of course, with the keyboard one, it only projects in like a red, almost like what a laser pointer, let's say, would do. But it projects a crystal clear image on your desk of the keyboard with all of the standard 101, 102 type U.S. design keyboard types on it. And it works the same way, like you say, when you place your finger on a key that's being projected, the infrared or the beam is being interrupted. And depending on, you know, where you put your finger, it, you know, represents that interruption as a key press. And the same thing would work, let's say, with the one that projects the display, 24 to 24 inches. Maybe they can do it bigger, I really don't know. But for test purposes, 22 to 24 inches is what I've heard, which of course is more than sufficient. You know, and it projects a color, crystal clear, high definition image into the air. And, you know, based on where you put your finger through that image, it'll say that you touched this part of your computer screen. So I'm guessing, in addition to just your VGA type aspect or HDMI type aspect, it would also have to have an interface being USB, I guess, or FireWire of some sort that would allow the data transfer back from the device. So yeah, it's a wonderful world we live in. Yeah, in regard to that last comment about the law, I guess one could argue that anybody in the front seat of a vehicle using a an in-dash or out-of-dash GPS, those devices now these days are also capable of accepting SD cards and whatnot. So I mean, who's to say that the gentleman that got ticketed while driving wasn't obtaining a GPS image? You know, no different than anything that would be mounted on your screen. In the event of the movie theater, I could see that one because it's technically a recording device. They do have a camera in them that you can import back to your computer or pocket-sized device like a tablet or a smartphone that takes your image and shoots it back to your computer as a recording device. But then one could argue another point. If they ban people from having Google Glass in a movie theater, are they going to ban everybody that brings their smartphone in as well that also has a recording device? So I guess in regard to those agents who arrested that individual for, you know, possible copyright infringement, everybody in the theater with a smartphone should have been removed that night as well. KY6V in the net, VO1UKZ.
Oh, boy. As the world turns. Thanks, Daryl. You bring up some very interesting points. Okay, we're sort of winding things down here. Last call. Any comments? We can stay here all day if necessary. I've certainly enjoyed this program. I hope you have too. This is KY6V for South Cars, looking for final check-ins.
YZR.
YZR. Go ahead, Bernie.
Okay, Gordon. Just wanted to say that it's overcast and snowing here, and I got satellite internet, and so you know how satellites can work. If you have DirecTV or Dish Network, you can get interruptions sometimes if it gets too cloudy or during storms or something. I have satellite internet, and my netbook is actually connecting to it wirelessly, and then because the satellite modem does not have ports according to the satellite company, I had to use a proxy server, so I'm dealing with that too as far as internet connections go. But I was unkeying my microphone probably too often too, and I switched hands. But anyway, I was using a Linux program for a while where it controls your closed circuit cameras. It can if you have electric door locks or something, you could lock your doors, you know, from some other location, and if you have the remote access enabled in your computer, and also it could turn your lights on and off if you have it set up for that. But yeah, that's interesting about the theater part there. My camera phone actually can record not only pictures, but it can record videos. I don't know how long it can record it. Probably not too long, but my camera phone records things too. But anyway, I just wanted to say that I'm accessing the internet through a satellite modem, and the netbook is accessing the internet connection to wireless, my wireless router, which is in a different room. If I ran Ethernet, I'd have to run at least 50 feet of Ethernet cable to connect in with Ethernet, so that might have been why I was cutting in and out, or because it's overcast, or because of the going through a proxy server, or because of the wireless part, or because I was unkeying the microphone off and on, too. And I noticed that you cut out once or twice on me, too, so I don't know. Maybe it was something else. It's hard to say why I was cutting in and out. But anyway, a very interesting program. Thanks a lot. 7-3, and catch you later. KY6V, KC9YZR.
Okay. Very good. Well, you were solid that time, Bernie. No problem whatsoever. Anybody else that would like to check in? I'm going to turn it over to Kathy here in just a moment and let her parley any announcements that might be for the good of the order. And then we're going to wrap things for today. Last call, please. Over.
9-0.
Mr. Illinois, go ahead, Dwayne.
Yeah. I was wondering about if I can have contact with the last gentleman. He said Ethernet. And I was curious about that. What is Ether? Because I studied some, I've read that's what that used to be called. The airwaves used to be called back in the 20s and 30s. Ether waves. I don't know what I'm saying until we get out through the ether. I was reading an article about that. about the beginning of communication and stuff. And I was just curious. I don't know for sure. N9-3.
Okay. Well, let me try to explain it this way. KY6V for Southcars. There is a cable, an actual cable, that is called an Ethernet cable. Generally speaking these days, there's two ways to get your computer information to your router, if you're using a router, or to your internet provider's modem. It's either done via Wi-Fi, with a Wi-Fi card that's in your computer, transmits it RF-wise to the unit that needs to get that information, or you can use a cable, plugs into an Ethernet port on the back of your computer, the side of your computer, and that cable is run over to the next device that needs that data. Does that make any sense to you, Dwayne? Over.
No, I got lost in the ether. I know ether is, I'll have to look up the definition of ether, is what I need to do. I'm just taking up time. I read the dictionary, so I'll just look up ether. See what they have to say. I know it's a gas, but I just wonder what else would come underneath the abbreviation of ether.
V1UKZ.
VH.
Yeah, okay, guys. I was going to throw it to one of you or the other. Maybe you could explain it a little more differently than I did. We'll start with you, Daryl. Go ahead.
Basically, to define Ethernet, there's two types, like you said. There's your Ethernet, which is runs through cabling. Then there's your wireless Ethernet adapter, which is commonly referred to as Wi-Fi. And Ethernet basically takes your internet access and your networking access amongst various computers in your own home. So your home, your network access and your internet access, and they basically call that Ethernet. That's just, I don't have any clearer way to define it than that. It's just basically a word that describes the combination on your network between network access and internet access. And it can be done through wireless or wired Ethernet.
Yeah, I think the confusion here with Dwayne is the term radio waves going through the ether. I'm old enough to remember that terminology, Dwayne. Victor Hotel, Steve, go ahead, sir.
Actually, Dwayne has stumbled onto a piece of history. And a matter of fact, it comes from Hawaii. Some of the first networks in Hawaii, because of the islands, used radio. And they used radio systems to transmit data back and forth between the islands. And they used the same type of protocols, collision sensing, so that if one radio was talking, other radios wouldn't try to transmit, and they would also detect collisions, where if two radios were transmitting at the same time, the receivers could detect that. And when Xerox was looking for a way to tie their computers together, and they were really trying to make workstations, they essentially took this approach from Hawaii, where the signals were being transmitted through the ether, and instead of transmitting them on the ether, put them on a piece of coax. So Ethernet does have a tie back to radio, KF5VH.
Okay, thanks, Steve. How about it, Dwayne? Are you still on the ether? Over.
No, I believe I've achieved what I was looking for. Thank you. N9-3.
All right. Thanks, guys. Miss Sunshine, anything for the good of the order here before we pull a wrap? KY6V.
All right. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and I see the text box. Ether had something to do with putting to sleep before surgery, Dwayne. So that was put in the text box. To me, it's nothing to do with the Ethernet, but enjoyed those comments. Let me just tell you about some of the upcoming nets and Gordon, and maybe just reemphasize for everyone to look at our website, check out the information, check out the podcast, and just have a lot of fun going through that. But I just want to reemphasize to go to our website, www.voip.southcars.com. Check out that website. Check out the breaking news. Look to the left and see the categories that Mr. Steve has put in there. Check out the NCS schedule, the calendar, and anything else. Just browse through it. There's a lot of pictures. There's a globe there. Just have a lot of fun going through that. But I do want to tell you about some of the upcoming nets. You know, Gordon, thinking about the net coming up on the 1st of February, that has to do with myself, and this is going to be the start of my third year as your VOIP net manager. So that's the next one on the global. We're going to be talking about past and present and future phonographic records, some of us who are old-timers. President's Day is coming, and then we have February events. That's all Global Family Hour. Sunday morning rag chew, you know, on the 2nd is Groundhog Day. Determines how much more winter we're going to have. We have the Orlando Ham Fest coming up, and the Winter Olympics, and then Ask an Elmer. But let me drop it here for just one moment. We are having a real fantastic subject coming up for our TIN, our monthly TIM, February the 13th. It's about building a website. And Gordon, you know, since Daryl, and I'm not sure if he's still here, and he's a computer whiz, you may want to invite him to that as well. But it's building a website. We have Steve and Gordon and I think Roger and maybe Doug, some others who will be there to share about building a website. So that's 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on February the 13th. So that's all I have, Mr. G. Thanks for running the session this morning. A great net, and hopefully it will be one of the podcasts put on our site. So I'm going to turn it back to you. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, back to KY6V.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I'm glad that you mentioned the 13th of February. You know, we're staying in the field of computers and our interest with that particular program. It's going to be delivered in a panel form. There are four people that are highlighted, and I can easily make that five, Daryl, if you'd like to join the panel. It'll be Steve out in Louisiana, Victor Hotel. It'll be Roger up in Pennsylvania. Both of these guys very heavy into IT networking and so on. It'll be myself, and it'll also be Gary, our assistant net manager out of the frozen north there in Syracuse. And, you know, it'll be an open session where questions can be asked of the experts at large. So, anything else for the good of the order, or we're going to have the fat lady sing, if I can find her, over.
This is KV4QI.
Well, go right ahead, Jim, and I want to thank you very much for being my backup today, sir. Very much appreciated. Over.
Oh, glad to do it. And I have one question that's off-subject altogether, but you mentioned in the course of this bit a software that you were using, a piece of software to convert that WAV file to a MP3 file. What software is that? Over.
Well, Jim, the software that I use is called Audacity. It's a free download program. It gives one a lot of tool functions to change things on an initial recording. You know, you can delete passages that you want to get out. You can put additional passages in. It gives you the opportunity to change file format, etc. Audacity is the name, and it is free, sir. Over.
Yes, I have that. So that's what I was kind of sort of hoping for. Now then, I can't hardly talk. Do you know where a person could find a tutorial on Audacity, or else would you sit down and record a tutorial on Audacity? Over.
Well, the answer to that is several fold, Jim. KY6B here. There is a built-in tutorial within the program, within the help file. There also is a reference to a Wikipedia write-up tutorial for Audacity. So once you download the program, unless you've got it already, you can find what you're looking for. Over.
Okay, thank you, sir. Maybe my comical sidekick can fathom all that out. But I've got Audacity, and I never have been able to make it do a dead blame thing. So appreciate that. That's all I have, sir. Over.
Okay, Jim. We'll have Rebecca find that and review it. I think that it speaks for itself. Push comes to shove, I'd be very happy to connect with you direct when you have Audacity up on your computer with a file ready, and I can walk you through the main ingredients very rapidly if necessary. Over.
Very good. Well, I'll try to find this material first. If that don't work, I'll get in touch with you. Over.